Show Recaps Theater presents Movies. So many movies as reviewed for you by your friends at Post Show Recaps. Featuring Grace and Ariel and their incredible movie takes, we hope you enjoy the show.
That's right, everybody. We are back here to discuss Firestarter. What a... My heart is burning still, and I'm so happy that I'm not alone to do this. I'm here with my co-host, Grace. Grace, how are you?
We have to control our powers. We have to learn how to use them for good, Ariel.
Grace, can you feel me pushing you to podcast with me?
Oh, my God. I crank your neck. Your eyes are bleeding. Uh-oh.
I have never felt more like Zac Efron in my entire life.
Listen, who asked for this? Not this pod. Everybody's been clamoring. When are you doing Firestarter? You're covering Firestarter. Who asked for this movie? A 40-year-old remake, pretty much, of a Stephen King novel starring Zac Efron.
Mm-hmm.
That the first one wasn't really good, and they're like, we better remake that. And then, but we're not probably not going to do that good of a job remaking it.
We'll just put it on Peacock.
We'll put it on Peacock. Perfect.
Ay, ay, ay. What a
are
time.
We? Yeah, I don't know. Are the Stephen King stuff? Are we like, I mean, we don't have to make everything he wrote, and we don't have to remake everything that didn't work the first time, just so people know.
No, yeah, I think, you know, luckily this project feels far enough removed from Stephen King that we don't need to like spend any time talking about what may or may not work in that original story, because it kind of doesn't matter. But I still, having said that, I can't feel like, oh God, poor Stephen King.
This is very much in his era of like, and he has some really good stuff around this time when he's just like, I think my muse will be creepy children. You know, he's like, all right, we got Carrie. And I think he does The Shining around this time when he writes this. And then it's like, and then there's also Firestarter, you know? Mm-hmm. So, yeah, I read an article that was like, I think Stephen King got asked about the movie Firestarter, and he was like, yeah, I don't know. And then he promoted some other movie that he didn't make. It's like also about like demonic children, which I think is great, because he's going to make money off everything. This movie no matter what, you know?
Exactly. Yeah, they already paid him up front, and any like royalties that he may or may not get, he doesn't strike me as the kind of person who will care one way or the other. You know, we're not talking about a large margin here of profits, or at least that's, you know, as far as we can tell. But yeah, I don't know. Mm-hmm. What's the final? Okay, I have to, because I looked early on, but I want to know how low the score got on Rotten Tomatoes, because in my memory, the lowest score I have seen that wasn't a zero was that terrible Fantastic Four movie that they made.
You almost
years
said
ago.
Fantastic Morbius movie.
Fantastic Morbius, which is the sequel to Morbius. And that had an 8%.
We're at 11, I think. At
Miles Teller. Wow. 11. Mm-hmm. With an audience of 45.
Yeah, the critics did not like this one. The audience, a little bit more.
More.
Morbius. I don't know. Yeah, we'll get into it. I certainly like. Normally we do like, should you see it or should you skip it? I feel like this is the first time I've ever said this on the podcast. You can totally skip this, even if you like horror. Unfortunately, I did tell Kate to watch it because we were covering it. Kate was like, "I'm looking for something to stream." Someone in the Discord was like, "I'm looking for something to stream."
Did you push her?
Yeah,
crinked your neck.
This is like, I'm looking for a horror movie. I'm looking for something that's on streaming, and that's good. And I was like, "Well, it is on streaming," you know. And so, yeah, unfortunately, I did recommend this to someone, but I think you could totally skip this one. Just listen to us talk about it for a bit, and you don't need to see it. I don't know.
I totally second everything you just said. If for whatever reason you listen to this podcast or a piece of it or the whole thing or whatever, and you're like, wow, I really want to watch this movie. Don't.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's probably the best advice we can give you.
I think I don't want to come out, always come out, especially if it's something we didn't like. I was trying to feel like, is there stuff in here that I did like? I thought the kid's performance was totally fine for a kid performance. Like it's not like this kid is going to become a superstar or anything. Like, I mean, no. Drew Barrymore plays the kid in the first one and obviously went on to great things. Maybe this kid will go on for great things. Ryan Kira Armstrong. She's totally fine. It mm-hmm. randomly has Kurtwood Smith from That 70s Show in it, which is kind of fun. Mm-hmm. And I really like Michael Gray Eyes, who I know him from Rutherford Falls, the like Ed Helms comedy show that I feel like kind of went unnoticed. But he plays kind of a villain-ish in that show, at least an antagonist to our protagonist. And he's mm-hmm. really good in that. And so I was very excited to see him. I think he's totally fine given what he's given in this movie. And then everything else, I'm like, yep, all right. That's a movie. At least it was 90 minutes, Ariel.
I mean, to be honest, it was a little over. It was an hour and 34, which I did not appreciate. I was like, ooh, 4 minutes too long. No, but yes, to your point in general, it is like going into it, you're like, okay, it doesn't matter how bad could it be. It's basically like an hour you have to strain yourself and then you can just coast for 20 minutes. You know, and I mean that in general, not for this movie. Like in general, it's like, okay, how bad can the movie be? Okay, I'll just have to focus for an hour and then I can just like coast. Man, there was a lot less coasting in this movie. There was a lot of burning. I had a burning desire for this movie to be done sooner than it was.
Yeah.
Yeah. And, you know, and to your point, you know, we don't, as far as I'm concerned, I could be wrong, but from my perspective, we don't come on this podcast and like just crap on a lot of movies. You know, for the most part, we try very hard to be like, there's redeeming stuff in here. And, you know, if you like this kind of movie, you should see this. I don't think this is one of those. This is the 11% speaks for itself. I will say that.
Yeah. From 134 reviewers. Yeah. Yeah. I feel like this movie suffers greatly from, I feel like it, the premise is totally fine for a horror movie, and then there's like this thing that happens very early on, you're like, okay, that changes things up a little bit, and then there's absolutely no middle to this movie, and then the ending is also kind of fine, if not like a little lackluster for what I think they could have done. And so the problem is like, it's like I got two pretty good, like two fine pieces of bread with like nothing, and they're like, here's your sandwich. Well, I would like stuff to be in the middle.
I would like more than just bread and lettuce, please.
Yes, please. Yes.
And this movie is produced by Blumhouse, which is, you know, has put out like some pretty big, you know, a lot of other not so good horror movies. Fans of horror especially will know that the spectrum of quality within the horror universe, especially and probably in my mind more so than other genres, like really runs the gamut as far as quality. Like you get some like real stinkers and some really, really great ones. Blumhouse known for, you know, Paranormal Activity, and that turned into a whole thing, and Insidious and The Purge, which is a whole thing, and Get Out, which is arguably one of their biggest movies. Invisible Man, wow, I forgot that was Blumhouse.
Invisible Man,
a great movie.
Yeah, are they they have the Halloween
the new Halloween franchise. Well. Yes.
Yeah. Do they, and The Purge, right? Do they mm-hmm. are they doing Nope as well? If they did Get Out, do they do Nope and Us, or did Jordan Peele was like, fine.
Jordan Peele was like, Get Out, I'm getting out.
Get Out.
You're not us. My guess would be, I don't know for sure, but my guess would be that was like, quote unquote, Jordan Peele's like first like foray into horror. So he was like, he did it under Blumhouse probably for finance reasons. And then it's like, now, you know, we can do our own thing. We don't need, that's what I think.
The other thing in this movie is it's directed by Keith Thomas, who I think has not done a ton. He did a 2019 movie called The Vigil, which I have not seen. And this is his second like full feature release. He's done a music video and a short. And he is doing an episode of Guillermo del Toro's Cabinet of Curiosities, which Ooh. Is scheduled for later this year. But yeah, so other than The Vigil, this is the only thing he's done. So a bit of like on the beginning of his directorial, you know, features. Mm-hmm. He must have liked what they've seen with The Vigil, but yeah, an unfortunate, I feel like stumbling out of the gate a little bit with Keith Thomas.
Yeah. Oh, I was wrong. Us, Jordan Peele's movie Us was produced by Blumhouse. Or it says Monkey Paw, which is
That's his company. Todd is, I feel like, will correct this.
Yes,
someone could tell us. Yeah,
yeah. No, it's listed on the Wikipedia as producing Us, but then I look at Us as a but regardless, this movie came out in 1984 and it stars Drew Barrymore. No, I'm just kidding. I kind of wish I had intended to see that movie first. And then I was like, no, I don't have time to watch potentially two not so great movies. So let's just stick to the assignment. So I'm so curious now because I didn't know that it was starring Drew Barrymore until like today.
I'll correct him. So it looks like Universal Pictures. So I think do they run Blumhouse, or they have an agreement with Blumhouse? They picked up they signed a 5-year exclusive deal with Jordan Peele in 2019. So all of his future ones will be under the larger like Universal Pictures banner. But I think Blumhouse is a subsidiary of Universal Pictures, so that makes sense why they're all sort of tied in together. I didn't know. I the Drew Barrymore thing. I sent Jess Sterling a picture of this movie. So this is the movie we're covering. Do you want to come and watch it? So absolutely not. It's just a small child staring at the screen.
With fire all over.
Yeah. And then I said, oh, but here's the original one, which is with Drew Barrymore, which maybe that's more enticing. But no.
We're still waiting for her.
I know. She's late.
Made an appearance.
Yeah. Yeah.
We figure we'd start without her. Jess, if you're listening, we're still waiting for you.
Yeah. So the original one is not super well received either. And so I don't know, somebody looked at this movie and was like, I think it could be worth remaking. And there's something interesting in here, but I don't really see why. The original one is a little bit, but I think the thing about the original one is the graphic effects are certainly dated now, but the some of the stuff that happens in the movie looks, I think, like, this is hard because it probably doesn't look as good as the stuff in this movie, but it's bigger in a way that like it feels much more dramatic. And like this, okay. Yeah. Are we spoiling this movie? Are we in spoiler territory yet? I feel like
I think we have to transition. Yeah.
Okay.
It's been long enough.
Because what this movie, the new movie, loves to do is close-ups. I feel like you can tell the budget of this film based on how often they're like, we're just going to close up on your face. And so much of this movie is like the girl, like the close-up on her face, and they love the blurry graphic image, and then the fire around her. And I think what the first movie does much better is like the scope of what she's able to do and what she's able to like blow up is much more like impactful than I think you get out of this movie, which is funny because I feel like that's one of the only reasons to remake this movie is like, yeah, you could do all the graphic stuff better now in 2022 than in 1984. And then they just like don't really do it because the movie is like a $10 million budget or $12 million budget or whatever, which is wild.
And they blew it all on Zac Efron, clearly.
Well, I kind of feel like maybe they did. It probably made a couple mil.
They blew some of it. Yes, they blew at least some of it on him because clearly, just from the outside looking in, even before I saw the movie, although I will say I showed up to watch it and I was like, oh, wow, Zac Efron's in this? And then I was like, oh, no, Zac Efron's in this.
I know, a bold choice, I think, to not put him on the poster when you're at, like, I saw very little like promotion for this movie. It was playing at my local theater, which doesn't play everything. So it chose to play this. So I always feel like there's at least one sort of like indie horror-y, like, you know, that type of film, always playing. So they were playing this, but yeah, to not,
I mean, my
really use Zac Efron's name here.
Yeah, my guess would be like, yes, let's cast him because it's a big name and we can use him and he's not too expensive. But then they decide, then they watch it and they're like, ooh, maybe not. Or like, maybe, you know, he's certainly not a, how can I say, a respect, like a known quantity in the horror universe of films and or like genre, and perhaps not like a respected one in the horror genre of films. So maybe they kind of pivoted. I don't know. And then was the plan all along to release it also on Peacock? Is that perhaps something, some like damage control that they did, you know, between COVID and them maybe realizing, oh no, this movie may not make a lot of money otherwise. Let's like scam people into getting Peacock by putting this movie on there. I don't know.
I feel so bad because I really like Zac Efron. I feel like he gets like a little, like, I feel like he gets a little.
Get your head in the game, Chris.
I actually liked the High School Musical movies. They were fun. And then he has this run where he's a pretty good, it looks like he's going to kind of be able to like scoot out a little career for himself being sort of like funny, actually. Mm-hmm. When he's in like Neighbors, what else is he in? He's in he's in like a bunch of stuff around this. I can't remember if they made three Neighbors movies. Oh, one of them might just be a short, but he was in Hairspray. He's in The Greatest Showman, which was not too long ago. And then I don't know, I feel like he came back and he played Ted Bundy in that I think that's a Netflix movie.
Yeah, Extremely Wicked, Shockingly Evil and Vile, yeah.
He has another movie out this year. It was called Gold. It looks to be like very serious as well. And it's been this long since I've seen somebody who is trying so hard to be a good actor and I can tell it's not working. And like normally I feel like sometimes I will watch movies and I'll be like, oh, that's kind of a bad acting performance. And then I'll watch something that's like actually very bad and be like, oh no, that's like amateur. And like, this wasn't that bad. But I feel like this was pretty rough, this acting performance of like Zac Efron's the dad in the movie. Okay. All right. He's the dad and he's serious dad. And he's like worried dad. I'm like, it's really not working. I'm so sorry, Zach.
I'm worried for him and his career. No, I mean, I will agree wholeheartedly specifically to the stuff you said about some great performances that he had in the comedy space. And I was genuinely happy to like, wow, look at him. He's doing so great. And like, he's leaning into what he knows how to do. And if he can like carve out like a corner of himself for himself and like that world, that's great. These more serious roles.
Yeah.
He would have to like push me into like liking them. It's just, listen, not everything is for everyone, right? Like as far as like taste and what you enjoy. And I think similarly, not every role and type of role is for every actor. And maybe he should do less of this, perhaps.
He can keep trying. It's fine. I would like him to succeed. So, you know, I don't know. He did a document. Does he have a documentary series that was on Netflix as well? Like, I think it's called Down to Earth.
Think about nature. Yeah.
Yeah. And then he has this is where there's two upcoming projects he has. One is a Three Men and a Baby remake, which I actually think could be really fun.
Oh, no,
I think
it depends who the three men are.
It does depend on this. Let me see. I don't think there's very much. Yeah. Only Zac Efron listed as somebody in it, and maybe I don't know. And then there's also going to be a TV show that's been announced, but there's no details about it yet. And it's called Killing Zac Efron, which again I think actually could work in this like Nicolas Cage world.
I was
going to
say
yes, weight of massive talent.
Nicolas Cage, yeah. Exactly. Yeah,
to like make fun of himself a little bit, and again be funny. You don't need to, don't be serious.
No more serious. I'm serious. No more serious.
I'm serious. Yeah, yeah. It just doesn't. He has no chemistry with anybody else in this movie, which the whole movie is about this small family unit, right? Who they all have powers. The two parents were tested on. They have this kid who seemingly has all of the same powers that like they is that even wasn't very explained very well. Seemingly she has all the powers that her parents have. Is that
even
right?
Just like, right, even just the explanation of the stuff, like they have like a little bit of like a cold open, and then they get into like the opening credits, and the opening credits is like this exposition dump of like the videotapes of the two parents, Zac Efron and the mom, like being interviewed for what we come to understand are like these experiments that ultimately gave them their powers. And then they now have this daughter who seemingly has just inherited their powers because they were given powers. Like, it makes sense. The parents didn't have powers, but they were given powers. And then of course they've been changed, genetically modified. And now their children will, or their child automatically has power. To your point, you kind of have to like put that together, and it's that thing of like, oh, you know it because you've seen other plots like that, or like, you know, other things in the genre that kind of help you fill in the blanks a little bit.
Yeah.
Normally I'm all for don't spoon feed me and like let me figure it out, but you know, it's a little sparse here.
Yeah, because it starts with like she sets the bathroom on fire, right? And they're like, she has a bomb. She had a bomb at school. Like, she didn't have a bomb at school. You dumb idiot. You dumb. She didn't have a bomb. She clearly has superpowers.
The teacher's like, ah, oh, she's such a good kid. I don't know how this, I don't know where this came from. All of a sudden she had a bomb. It's like, no.
So yeah, Andy has like telepathy and he can control people what to do. Ariel joking about the neck cracking, and he bleeds from his eyes, and he can basically tell people to do, which he really only uses at the moment to basically do like hypnosis therapy of like convincing people like to stop smoking is the one that we see, but it's like pushing him already even to do that.
He's, which, like, you know that hurt me because you know I love to watch people smoke in a cool fashion.
Yeah, how dare you, Zac Efron, making like, people stop smoking. Yeah,
but yes, to your point about like not explaining things, it's like, okay, so the gist of it is he has telepathic powers and the mom has telekinetic powers. But his powers seem to also extend into the realm of like dreaming about the future. Like at one point he has like a flash forward kind of thing where he sees baby Charlotte, like the crib on fire. And then we find out later that actually happened.
Oh yeah. That's the opening scene of the movie, right?
Yeah. And then it's just like, it's never really explained. It's kind of yada yada. Like his powers are under this very vague umbrella of telepathy. But also he can sometimes see the future and also convince people to do things. It's like
the story is not that complicated. I think I could like say it in two sentences, which is these two people get experimented on. They get superpowers. They have a baby with superpowers. The baby is growing up. The agency that like is like gave them the powers is not super happy that they exist in the world and would like to try and find them. So then the agent who like now runs this operation is meeting with like the guy who did it. That's Kurtwood Smith. He's kind of like regretting everything he did and basically being like, you have to go get them. You need to like destroy the child. They send a man, like a hitman after them, that's Michael Gray Eyes as Rainbeard, to go and track them down. And so he also has powers. And that's basically the entire story, is that Rainbird is chasing after the family. Rainbird kills the mother. The two of them get away. Eventually the dad gets caught. And the only way that like she gets lured into a trap to go and save him. And then the only way that she's able to like basically like get out alive is to simultaneously like just kill her dad and the agent. Cause then the agent's dead and won't presumably come after her. And then Rainbird, who like killed her mom, is like, you go on this way? He's like, yeah, okay, I'll come with you. And he carries
her. I am going that way.
It's not that complicated of a movie, and yet the movie makes it far more complicated than it needs to be.
It certainly feels complicated.
Yeah, it's not that. It's an agent. It's just basically Stranger Things. A kid gets away from the, like, kind of, right? It has powers. Mm-hmm. They need to like track the kid down, right? And yet it like doesn't. It doesn't work emotionally, and it doesn't really work plot-wise either.
No, it's kind of like, and the music to that point of like Stranger Things a little bit, like it feels very dated, like very like 80s, like a classic Stephen King movie, a little bit like it reminded me of that sequel to The Shining they made a couple of years ago with Ewan McGregor.
Yes.
Sleeping Dog?
Sleep, yeah.
Dr. Sleep.
Can I actually say, John Carpenter does the music, who has done the music for the Halloween film, right? Yeah, Halloween. Some of the most influential like horror like scoring of all time. Mm-hmm. Yeah. I think the music in this movie is great. It does not, like, the rest of the movie can't match
it. Doesn't deserve the score. Yeah.
It doesn't deserve a good this good of a score.
Because when the credits were rolling, I was like, this music is way too epic for this movie.
It's really epic. It's really good. I mean, it's very like Halloween like. Yes. It's like slow and like it's like beating and what, but it's very good. If I'm gonna give this movie any compliments, it's like the score is really, really well done. Yeah.
Incredible. So now that we finally have started talking about the plot of the movie, we're going to take a quick commercial break, hear a word from our sponsors, and we'll be back to discuss more things. Okay, we're back. I tried closing my window with my mind, but I just set everything on fire. So I was like, I should just go back to the podcast.
Oh, no. Your eyes are bleeding again.
My eyes, I'm sorry. I have these tissues next to me to catch my blood. Uh-huh. Speaking of the bloody eyes, I think ultimately, you know, we've already talked about Zac Efron, but I think in summation, it's like right off the bat, he's not working, and it's like he's not meeting the emotional beats of the movie because he really only has one like mode that he's operating on this whole movie, like whether he's sad or happy or I don't know, bleeding from the eyes. He kind of just like has like that same look on his face. Yeah. And even the daughter seems to have more of an emotional range than him. And she should have set him on fire, I guess is what I'm saying.
She does, actually. She does. I was on the Candy podcast, which is a podcast you were also on with Sarah Carradine. Podcast released all this week. And I posited whether we should put Melanie Linsky of Yellow Jackets fame in this show Candy, if we should put her on the sad woman face acting Hall of Fame along with at least Elizabeth Moss for now.
Mm-hmm. Yes,
I feel like Zac Efron is not even coming close to the sad man face acting.
No,
he just has the same. He kind of has the same look on his face the whole movie. The other piece of this movie, there should be more to, you know what, the idea that like there's this kid who has this power and so is therefore othered in the world and needs to be able to like figure out what to do with that should be something that should be so easy to like nail. And so there's this whole thing about the two parents disagreeing about whether to like, is that for just being like she needs to suppress her abilities and contain that nothing will go wrong with that, and then the mom being like no, she needs to be able to like use her powers to be able to like hone them, should also be a fairly easy story to like tackle and it be fine, and it just also doesn't work at all.
It feels, I agree, it doesn't really work. And it feels very, and it did in the beginning anyway, feel very X-Men of like,
right?
Do we try to, the mother is of the mind of like, the only way she's gonna like learn to control her power and not use it is by learning to use her power. And like, that's like, there has to be a level of control that she achieves.
Yeah.
And Zac Efron is like, no, suppress it, suppress it, suppress it. And I was like, no, why are we trusting this man? with the bloody eyes. He knows nothing about anything going on here.
My therapist literally told me to stop suppressing things. So you need to maybe get a therapist.
You've been bleeding from the eyes like on a couple of different podcasts. So I'm glad that you got that advice.
Well, he also, I guess the thing is he's like, I'm using my powers and it's not working. It's like physically draining me. It like hurt. So
you know, yeah, that's true. Yeah, from his perspective. Yeah, from his perspective.
That's why I think that, like, I see why somebody keeps looking at least twice. They've like read the Stephen King novel and been like, "There's something here," and they try to execute it. It just like doesn't really work, I think.
Yeah, so, because that kind of premise falls by the wayside because that's not really what the movie's about. Like, the movie's really about like it turns into a movie about survival and like how can she not get caught, and less about like, should we keep hiding her power and like this, this philosophical discussion of, you know, if you have this ability, do you use it? Is it, you know, because she's a child, there's also the element of like, she's a small child and like, she's not quote unquote ready yet. And like, maybe we should wait until, she's older to like really teach her and blah, blah, blah. And I think it kind of, like I said, it falls by the wayside. It matters less and less. The, especially once the mother dies, it's like, oh no, she's stuck with this terrible actor. Like, she's just,
There's the middle chunk of the movie, which is basically them. After the mother dies, we get this horrific scene of like, this is once again, like the lessons about her, whether to use her powers and that the fact that she doesn't know, the unfortunate cat scene, which is, I think perhaps leave it there. This is why did you put this in here? This is, there's like a world in which like horror obviously is about like, you know, evoking reactions, and it's right. Just like, not this one. I don't want this one. This scene
is so dumb, because we get like the very, and I guess in the one on there's a world in which like that is kind of tipping its hat to other horror things, or just like a certain genre of movie. You know, you and I talked about The Wilds, and like we never saw like that cat that was like proud, right, that was like stalking them, and it was all just shadows and like a random paw. Right. And here in this part, like, it is horrific, but it's also so stupid. Like, there are parts of it that are so stupid where like we see this like fake paw like scratch her, and then this really horrible thing happens, but then they're just like staring at this cat who should not be alive anymore. Well, and it's from this noise.
He tries to be like, this is a learning opportunity, you have to, you know, it can't be a reaction, it has to be a decision to use your powers. And it's like, it doesn't work. And so he makes her finish killing the cat, which like, you just be a father and be like, I have to go kill the cat. Just you do it. You don't need to make her use her powers to do it. It's such a clumsy, like, this is the point of the, like, this is a moment of the movie, like someone wrote it, and like, it just doesn't make any sense. I will say that, like, moving on from the cat scene, we do end up getting the like hitchhiker portion of the movie, where they're trying to get a ride. They end up getting a ride with this man. Zac Efron is using his like push powers a little bit to like, you know, do it. I actually didn't hate this part of the movie, and I would have actually kind of like, maybe like, because I feel like this is the only part of the movie where the beginning of the movie, this stuff is in play, where like they're like, why they constantly move, but they don't have Wi-Fi, so they never get caught. And so now you're in this scenario where like, you could actually build some good tension here about like not getting caught. And I think the idea, like, he does use this like old man, and yet the old man seems really nice. I actually really like the actor who plays the old man. Like, this whole stuff is fine. And then they wake up in the middle of the night or in the morning or something, and he had been drinking, and he's watching the news report of them like looking. And so like, then I'm like, okay, like, that's interesting. What's going to happen now? And then the cops show up, and he's like, I called the cops like when I first saw the news. So you've just been watching the news story like on repeat. Like, the plotting of the movie made no sense. You have to figure out how to get the police there without him being like, yeah, I've just been watching this for like 2 hours, the same news story on repeat. It's so stupid. It didn't make any sense.
I think you used the perfect word, clumsy, to describe that particular scene, but just, there are certain things in this movie that just feel like, was there no adult here? Like, in did the director like leave for a day or two?
I don't know.
I should say one of the few bright spots for me personally that we have yet to discuss is the director of the program that was like creating the, I almost called them mutants, that was creating these people with powers, which is called DSI. And this, she plays Captain Hollister, this director of this thing. It's played by Gloria Rubin, famous for playing Krista, the therapist, speaking of therapist, on Mr. Robot.
Mr. Robot, yeah.
He was so good in that, certainly Mr. Robot. And here is fine, but is still way better than everybody else in this movie for the most part. And for me, was like an emotional touchstone of like, okay, I can understand her. If no one else, maybe the child, I can understand her emotional, you know, beats and like what she wants and her intentions. And she's great in this.
I thought she was good. I thought John Beasley, who plays Irv, who's the man that they go to his house, I thought he was good. Kurtwood Smith is fine, I guess. And then I thought Michael Grayhouse is like also fine, considering he's just sort of like a hitman, like a you know, like So I actually think like they mostly cast pretty well, except for the one of the leads. But yeah, I would agree with your take that Gloria Rubin is pretty good in this movie.
She's great in everything, and you know, at the end she gets. Even at the end, it's like there's such silly dialogue that has to come out of her mouth, but she still is delivering it in a way that feels real, or in a way that at least feels real to her, for her. She's like finding the quote unquote truth, right? That you, like, you hear like actors have to find. So they're lucky to have her. And I hope that they spent at least some of that $12 million budget on her clearly underpaid salary. She deserves more.
She's in I believe the First Lady that I don't know what network it's on, but where it's all the first ladies. She's I think she's been in that. So she's getting work. It's Showtime. That's on Showtime.
She is getting work. I want her to work. Not in this. I don't want her to make any more of these movies. I don't want her to be in the sequel, but yes, I'm glad that she's getting the work that is so well deserved.
Especially after
Mr. Robot.
So Gloria Rubin, there's a scene. So the scene where they have captured the father, and they like trick her into thinking she sees a vision that she needs to go come to the DSI lab to like get her father. Her father is trying to like tell her to he told her to run. I guess he can also make people see visions, because that's how she gets away from Rainbird, is that he makes Rainbird think that she runs away. But then we just see her also running in the field. Like, we just see her running in the field. Like, I feel like he didn't give her that much of a head start. I guess she you know what I mean? Is that for
right? The funny thing is too, like, he shows her the vision that that Zac Efron's character gives Rainbird about the daughter is in actuality the
same.
He's showing reality happening, but he's showing it happening, I guess, at like a slower pace in a way, or like he's distracting him in a way where like he makes Rainbird think he has walked along to the field and he's now watching her. But why not show her running somewhere else?
Out of the other direction.
Like the other way.
Because ultimately, if Rainbird realized, oh no, like even if he doesn't realize it's an image, he would start running the direction that the daughter goes.
Yes.
It makes no sense.
This makes no sense. This feels like a Zac Efron thing and not a movie thing.
Whatever. So he gets caught. And so then we do get incredible like survivalist skill training montage where she's learning. She keeps accidentally lighting brushes on other branches on fire before she eventually lights the fire on fire, which is amazing. It's so good. I love it. And then, she gets to the thing, and she basically goes, like, detective. The scene in the car where she gets in the back of the worker at the thing, and he's like, I don't do anything. I'm just a regular. And she's like, I don't believe you. And then, like, eventually, like, hand me over your, like, bat. It does. And then she, like, burns him alive. I thought it was, like, genuinely creepy, good stuff. And so her, like, you know, Mission Impossible style, like, getting through the building. But it's obviously, it ends up just being a trap. Except then the dad's just like, yeah, the only way you're going to get out of this thing is if you burn me and this woman alive. So just go ahead. Just do it. I think he might even push her to do it. He tries to push her to do it, I think.
It wasn't immediately clear to me that distinction of like, she clearly knew what he was asking her to do. She clearly didn't want to do it. Was he successful in his push of pushing her? Because he's also really weak at that point, and also like she seemingly has like come into her own as far as like being able to control her power. And there's something to be said about like, okay, if she's inherited both her parents' power, then she might have like a little bit of an immunity or a block against him using his power against her. But regardless, he does try to. He tells her that they need to die, and then he like tries to push her to do it, and but she does
her
do
decision.
It. I have to say, like, we don't have to spend a lot of time talking about this, but she lights her father and poor Gloria Rubin on fire.
Mm-hmm.
And then there's no noise coming from them. It's like complete silence.
Yes.
Coming from these people. Like, maybe not him because he's powerful, but wouldn't she be screaming? Like, I just.
She's again, I don't know.
I don't need these things, right? Like, I don't need it to be any more horrific. It's horrific enough that they're being lit on fire. But like, as far as realism, you gotta believe it. Like, that kind of hurts, right?
I would assume so. And then like, cause she like unlocked all the like doors and stuff, like Rainbird is released as well, who was put back in a cell because
plot device.
I don't know. And then like this is my favorite part of the movie, Ariel, is when she's going through the hallway and she's just like blasting everybody. And then they like open the door and all these men come out and they're in suits. You're like, fire retardant suits. And then they're standing there with like guns. And she's like, well, I'll just burn through your suits. And they're like, nah, sprinklers. And the sprinklers start. And apparently totally subdues the most powerful child in the whole world is subdued by the fire sprinklers until Rainbird shows up and shoots all the men to eventually save her from being captured or
they
killed.
They knew
or...
to where the scene is wild. Because at first it seems like she's being successful in her lighting them on fire.
Yeah.
Then it seems like, and honestly, I will say, like in the moment, I was like, okay, this was shot all kinds of wrong. Because if their suits are actually successfully, you know, fireproof, then it should have been shot in a different way. Because you can't really tell. But whatever, move on. So they knew to bring fire retardant suits, but like they didn't wear their bulletproof vests.
No, they did not. He just shoots them. Yeah. And also just like, what if she didn't go to the sprinkler room? You know, right, what if she didn't take that pathway out? You know, it's just like, I can't believe that, like, you know, that's what they're like, put the flame suits on and set on the fire sprinklers.
Flame on.
We're good to go. But then, yeah, Rainbird. Like helps her, and then he like looks like he's like, you can kill me, I guess, because you kill everybody. And then she's like, nah, I'll leave you. And she leaves. And then he like she blows up the entire building, which again, it's way better than the original, but whatever. And then she's sitting
Would you have loved a Drew Barrymore like sitting in one of the cells, like cameo? That would have been incredible.
That would have been great. And then he comes up and he's like, hey, and he like carries her on the beach, which I get, I don't know. Is this a metaphor?
No, Carrie is a different Stephen King movie.
This is when they say like, there were two footprints in the beach, but then God carried me.
No, Grace.
Because I guess Rainbird is Jesus in that metaphor or not. I don't know.
Uh-huh.
It's so, and then the amazing score comes on. You're like, oh. That's a good score. Bad movie.
Great score for not a great movie. Yeah, and it like ends, and there's all the smoke, and you're like, where are they going? Oh,
they're just walking down the beach. Yeah,
and the movie ended, and I was like, thank God.
Okay, so people who are now this late at the movie, or you're in, you know, we're 40 minutes into the movie, but definitely the first time I went to go watch, I fell asleep and I had to rewatch parts of it on later. I had to rewatch all the stuff I missed. There's only two movies I'm a notorious. I used to fall asleep. My brother made this joke. I probably made this on the podcast where he's like, I'm really excited for a movie podcast where you'll talk about the first half of the movie and how you fell asleep in the second half of the movie. But I've only fallen asleep in two movies this year. And so far, Morbius and Firestarter. Maybe my falling asleep, you know, it is matching tastes, you know? Yeah. And I liked Morbius, so
I may or may not have dozed off.
Yes, part of this movie. Amazing. We both fell asleep in Firestarter.
Thankfully, it was streaming on Peacock, so I was able to go back and watch the rest.
Yeah, don't worry. We watched the whole movie, just not all
just
at once.
Not
the first
in all at one sitting.
Which is actually how I watch most movies, is that I watch them too. I'll be like, oh, it's like 10 o'clock. I could like start a movie to be done before midnight. Fall asleep 15 minutes later, you know.
Ugh, yeah. I hate that. I hate like watching, like starting an episode and like you're not sure and you're like, oh, I think I can get through this.
Yeah. Yeah.
And then for like days, and then I just get stuck on it. It becomes like a mental block. I can't get past that episode. That's what's going on with me and For All Mankind right now.
Do you know what I used to, when I was in high school? We're going on way tangents. I think we're done with Firestarter. The way I watched One Tree Hill when I was in high school was on the DVD box set, but I would in my room, I would just, whenever I had time, I would come in, I would play it and I would pause it. Whenever, so if I like came home and had like 30 minutes where I had to go, I would watch 30, like actually like 25 minutes and I'd pause it in every episode. So I don't think I've ever watched it like I watched this episode. I watched like the last 15 minutes of an episode and then 5 minutes of the next episode and then like 20 minutes. You know, that's how I watch. That's how I watch all of One Tree Hill.
It sounds appropriate.
Yeah.
Like the right way to watch One Tree Hill.
Yeah.
Did you ever get through the whole thing?
I did watch the whole thing. Yeah.
Oh, nice.
It gets really weird at the end. Mm-hmm. Here's something. I feel like again, we're done with Fire, sir. We've been off for a couple weeks.
Yes,
and we used to do this a lot at the beginning, which is, are you watching anything else? Did you watch anything else over the last few weeks that you, we're going to be covering some stuff. I feel like there was a bit of the May dredge, I think, is sort of starting to end. Mm-hmm. We have some stuff coming out. Top Gun comes out. Bob's Burgers. Yeah, Downton Abbey 2 is out.
Done as of this week, yeah.
So I think things are picking up and we'll be back weekly and sometimes bi-weekly. So that'll be fun. But were you during these May dredges, is there anything else you watched?
There is something that I just saw last night, which was a movie called Men.
I want to go see this so
directed
bad.
Directed by Alex Garland, famous for directing Ex Machina and a couple other things that I can't remember. Oh, he did Devs, the TV show, which I loved.
Yes.
Wild movie. Definitely go see
Jesse Buckley, right?
Jesse Buckley, yes, yeah. Who I liked in this way more than I liked in a different movie that we covered with her in it, The Lost Daughter. Uh-huh. I do like, just to be clear, I like Jesse Buckley.
Hey, that's Academy Award nominee role, The Lost Daughter.
Olivia Colman, Colman cast. Yeah, I just, yeah, that I kind of forgot she was in that. I didn't really like her character. Anyway, this movie, Men, is not for the faint of heart. I will say that.
Yeah.
It is a disturbing movie, so you should go into it knowing that. I really enjoyed my experience. For as much as you can enjoy that kind of thing, it made me feel a lot of complicated emotions. And I think it's worth seeing. I'll say that.
I've been excited for it. It's been playing. There's been ads for it a lot in the movie that I'm going to. And unfortunately, we're... I don't know if he wanted this reaction, but like it'll be the whole trailer, which it makes it look like a very enticing movie. I know is it Rory Kinnear has a big role in it. I will not reveal more than that.
He does.
And then it would be like, and then there's this very, the creepy sound of her like echoing through the underneath the bridge.
Yes. Oh my God. I can hear
really it. Good. That was like most of the trailer for a while. I've been incredibly excited to see it. And unfortunately, every time it'd be like Men, most of the audience is like chuckling. And so I'm excited for it to sort of like, I've been really excited to see it. And I'm hoping that sort of like, cause I feel like that would be unfortunate to like tackle a movie, I think in like this time period called Men as like this horror movie, if it doesn't work. So I'm glad to hear you like it. And I'm excited to see it. I get really excited. There's a movie, Operation Mincemeat, was on Netflix. I was very excited. Ooh. It's like great cast, Colin Firth, Matthew McFadden, from Succession, Jason Isaacs in it as well. And it's like an old timey war movie period piece. So I was very much excited to see that. It was very good. And of course, I'm sure you saw this as well. Doctor Strange. In the Multiverse of Madness.
There's a universe in which I didn't see it, but we do not live in that universe.
Okay.
So
great.
I did see it.
Did you like it?
Yeah, I liked it a lot. It wasn't 100%. It didn't reach the highs that I wanted it to reach, it didn't have the consistency of the highs that I wanted, but that's on me. I still think it was worth watching. It was enjoyable. And I liked it a lot. And I certainly think it's a better, you know, as far as sequels go, it's better than the first movie.
Yeah, I would agree with that.
I actually like Doctor Strange, the first movie, a lot.
Me too, actually. Yeah.
But
I don't know if he works for me as a leading man, but I feel like in this movie, he doesn't in like a Marvel movie. I obviously very much like Benedict Cumberbatch and in a lot of the other stuff he does. I don't know if like he's so Iron Man-y and I don't know that it's like working for me in this world. He's so like he often has to be like he's like in every scene of the movie, and I feel like he has to be so like plot heavy that I don't whatever. But I like the movie as well, and I would agree with your take that like I don't think it goes. It wasn't as fun maybe as I thought it would be in terms of the concept I thought they were going with. It ended up much more being much more like horror, which I should have expected from Sam Raimi, but I really wasn't. Mm-hmm. And it has a phenomenal performance from Elizabeth Olsen. So it's,
I was going to say, for sure, it's worth mentioning her, calling out her great work. That honestly, I loved her and Vision storyline in Infinity War. I think for as very, very, very little runway that they were given to work with, they do an exceptional job of like mining all the emotion in their few minutes together in that movie. And then WandaVision obviously spends a lot more time with them. And for me personally, it made me care about a character that I kind of didn't really care about before. So to get like all that paid off here in a way that for the most part works, certainly performance wise, Elizabeth Olsen works really well here. I'm happy for her.
I'll tease that you and I, obviously all plans could change, what have you, but you and I might be talking a Marvel movie in the future. So I have been going back because I feel like my Marvel knowledge was very like, I would watch it while like also on Twitter. And so I've been kind of going back and boy, I forgot that, like, you know, when Wanda and Pietro show up, like how Russian they are. I forgot that.
Do you mean Sokovian?
Yeah, sorry. They have such like her accent, and slowly just watching as the movies go along, her them be like, you don't have to do that accent anymore. It's fine. Less. Yeah. Pietro's dead, so don't worry. You don't have to do the accent.
No one else is here.
Yeah. I forgot how heavy accented they were when they showed up, which is hilarious.
And I do very quickly just want to call out another small movie because I think it's worth, you know, things like this that kind of easily fall through the cracks, but that are well worth people's time. I like to shout out when possible. There is this movie called Petite Maman.
I want to see this so bad. I want to see it so bad.
I had the absolute, I don't even know what word to use, like privilege of seeing this movie, having never seen a trailer, having never read anything about it. And I wish for that for other people, because even to discuss the genre of the movie in a way would be spoiling it. I actually stupidly being educated in this country, I misinterpreted the translation of the title. So I went in actually super blind, more than I would have had I realized what the title actually was saying in English.
Is it only an hour and 12 minutes?
It's an hour and 12 minutes. It's like the best episode of television you have ever seen. It's so good.
I mean, wow, I could go see this tonight instead of what I was going to see instead, which...
You could theoretically do both. No. But for sure, this one, because this one's in more limited release, I would say if you see it, you know, take the chances.
Am I wrong that this is the same person who wrote Portrait of a Lady on Fire? Is that?
I think it's the same director.
The same director. Yeah. If you've never seen that movie, Ariel will be joining Brooklyn Zed and myself to do the top 10 LGBTQ movies of the month. If you are a patron, you can either in the Discord in the announcement section, you can vote on your favorite movies, queer movies, and. If you are not in the Discord, I believe Josh was going to email the link out to all the people. Portrait of a Lady on Fire is one of my favorite LGBTQ films of all time. It's so good. It's beautiful. Good. When I heard that this is the movie that people are getting like very excited about from the same director, I was like, okay, yeah, I got to see this.
I can't wait to talk. Honestly, I can't wait to talk about this movie with you specifically because I can't say why, but I have a feeling that you're going to like it. So.
Okay.
To everyone out there,
because I'm a petite maman.
You're the petitest maman ever of all time.
Okay,
and you're Canadian, so you actually know what that means. Unlike me 2 weeks ago.
Wait, what can I? No, never mind. I won't ask you what you thought it was. Never mind. Everybody in the Discord, if you go in the movie thread and let us know what you thought Ariel thought the translation of petite maman was.
Okay, I think on that note we have said everything there is to say, certainly about Firestarter. That happened many minutes ago. Grace, what are you up to besides this in general? These parts?
You know, Shining Girls with Dr. Amanda and Dr. Melissa. The doctors are in the house and I am there as well. What else am I doing? I was on a couple episodes of Candy with Sarah Carradine. I feel like I have so much more.
Winning Time is over, right?
Winning Time is over. Under the Banner of Heaven is the other one that I'm currently covering with DM Philly, Andrew Garfield show. He is a detective, trying to figure out the murder, a double murder, and it also flashes back to the sort of creation of the Church of Latter-day Saints. It's very, very interesting. It's very good. Over on Rob is a podcast. I cover sports with the Off-Speed podcast. Ariel, I know that you are having early mornings at the moment because the French Open is on right now. Is that right?
Yes. And I'm literally checking the scores right now. Yes. Because it's been happening all day.
Yes. And I have another little project that's coming up that I'm very excited. We've been doing some of the work on it for a podcast series that will come out on Rob as a Podcast in June. Specifically June for a very specific reason. And I'm so excited about what we've been doing and I'm excited to share it with the world. So it won't be long and we can let you know about this Rob is a Podcast project I am working on. It should be a lot of fun. What about you, Ariel?
Well, now I just want to know what this secret project is.
You know what this is.
No, I don't. I think I know, but I think it's one of those like French translation things where like, I think I know, but I think I'm wrong.
Petit podcast. It's Petit Podcast. They're a little micro podcast. They're 5 seconds. And they're a treat. They're a little mouge.
They're little. They're vines. Mm-hmm. I am covering the Staircase limited series on HBO Max with my co-host Marissa. Covering, I think that's it. Besides movies, there was something else. I think that's over. No,
I know you and I know we came out of like doing The Wilds and you did some episodes of Heartstopper. I feel like I was on a
I also was on a mad rush to get to vacation, which thankfully I was able to take. And I also, similar to you, was on an episode of Candy with Sarah Carradine, episode 3. So I'm excited to go back and finish that now because I couldn't finish it because of, you know, the episode I was covering, and now I want to. So check that out. That's also on Pusher Recaps. And if you're still listening to us, we appreciate you so much for doing so. We will be back next week with our Top Gun coverage. I'm very excited because the buzz
it's getting such good reviews.
The buzz is insane. The buzz is insane across the board. Like,
yeah, I think I have some hot takes about the original Top Gun, which we'll get into next week. But the reviews for this movie are the in fact, one of the people I trust the most when it comes to their movie critiques said it it does. Yeah, I believe they call it the perfect action movie. So that's the buzz it's getting. I know.
Stop it.
I know.
I'm seeing it on Thursday. I can't see it quick enough. All right. We will see you then to hear all our hot takes, but really just Grace's hot takes specifically. Take care. Bye-bye.